Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live here on News Radio on Saturday afternoon, or whether you're listening to the podcast version of this show anytime you want, anywhere you want. And I want to offer a quick apology to our podcast listeners as well. Came in today to record today's show, realized the last couple of shows did not get uploaded to our podcast service. So if you haven't already heard like the shows from the first couple of weeks of April, we're going to make sure those get uploaded as well. So you should have a bunch of shows drop in your feed at once. So you will not be able to get enough of me and my co-host who's on the line with me, Jeremy Branch, in your ears. Jeremy, welcome.
Is there anybody that we can like specifically point to and blame for the lack of podcasts for the last 2 weeks?
We can. Yeah. It's somebody that's got two thumbs and looks a lot like me.
you had a perfect opportunity to put it on me, but I appreciate you taking the high road.
I'm glad
to be here.
Not my style, dude. If I screw up, I admit it.
So do you remember a couple of years ago that Vanity Fair cover with like Tom Cruise and I think Russell Crowe might have been involved with it, and Javier Bardem? It was the Universal Monster universe that never came to be.
Was that actually a Vanity Fair cover? I know there was a photo, but I didn't realize it was a Vanity Fair cover.
I might be talking out of turn there. For the listeners, several years ago, they had big plans to kick off what was going to be known as the Dark Universe for Universal Pictures, and mm-hmm. while that never came to fruition, the folks over at Blumhouse put out a really good Invisible Man movie. And at that point, it looked like we were well on our way to establishing maybe a potential shared universe with all the monsters in it. Since then, they've released The Wolfman and more recently, Lee Cronin's The Mummy, which I have not had a chance to see yet.
Yeah.
But it looks like we might be in the midst of another failure of a universal shared universe, Leo.
Well, a couple of things I want to point out here. First of all, the Lee Cronin's The Mummy is not actually coming out from Universal. It's coming out from Warner.
So
even though it's Blumhouse, I know.
Interesting.
I know. I did appreciate that they've apparently issued several tweets reminding people that Brendan Fraser is not in this movie.
Yeah, and apparently there is a Mummy 4 being released in 2028.
There is, yeah, there is. Yeah, so, my other comment on that is, does anybody know who the hell Lee Cronin is?
I mean, I do. He did that Evil Dead Rise movie.
Yeah, I mean, but, okay. And of course, Lee Cronin is the first name you think of when you think of Evil Dead. Oh, wait, it's about the 10th name you might think of when you think of Evil Dead.
I'm going to think of
Sam Raimi. I'm going to think of Bruce Campbell. I'm going to think of Rob Tappert. Might think of Fede Alvarez. You know, I might think of Jane Levy.
Maybe it's a way to scapegoat Lee Cronin. They weren't going to call it Lee Cronin's Mummy until the negative screen reactions came out.
I generally have an issue with putting any director's name in the title of a movie. Like, I get that since the auteur period of the 70s, it has become fashionable to feel like a film is the possession of the director, which is not in any way true. I mean, film is such a collaborative effort. But I recognize that when they do this, they're doing it to distinguish the film. That like they're trying to, there's been 50 films called The Mummy, probably.
Yeah.
They're just trying to avoid the date in parentheses afterwards in the IMDb listing.
Good point.
Yeah, I get that. I get it's a branding thing. I get it's to distinguish it from all the other movies. You know, let's look at this logically. The last movie called The Mummy was the Tom Cruise movie from, 2017?
Something like that.
That was the start of the Dark Universe that never... emerge from that because that movie was so bad.
Yeah.
Which, you know, side note, because, yeah, I can't say anything without going off on five tangents. Here's my hot take here. My Subway take on this, if you watch those Subway take videos, which I love. The universe building stuff in that movie was not bad. The universe building stuff in that movie was the most interesting part of that movie. I was here for the dark universe side of it. It was just the actual meat of that film in particular that was not good.
So for those at home that may not have seen that movie, Russell Crowe shows up at the end as Dr. Jekyll.
Not even at the end, like in the middle.
Yeah.
That was the, they were setting Dr. Jekyll up to be the Nick Fury.
Yes, very much so.
To be the, you know, the centerpiece, you know, the center character that brings everybody together. Russell Crowe played him. I thought Russell Crowe played him well. I thought the universe stuff was pretty interesting. I thought Sophia Boutella as the mummy was an interesting choice too. It was the fact that they turned it into a Tom Cruise action movie that was a problem.
Like, yeah.
And no slide against Tom Cruise, but you know, it was just a boring action movie with some supernatural dressing.
Yeah.
But the actual universe building stuff, the stuff that would have led to the dark universe, was interesting. And I was interested in some of the other announced casting that never came to fruition because the movie bombed so bad. So would I like to see a, for lack of a better term, dark universe, which now is just the name of a land at a theme park, which is supposed to be really cool. I haven't gotten to go check it out yet.
Mm-hmm.
Don't call it that because that name's tainted now.
Yeah.
But would I like to see a universe of the Universal Monsters? Of course I would. But you know what? We had that. Like, go back to the 40s, man. Those are the original crossover movies.
Yep.
You know, Frankenstein meets Dracula and Dracula meets the Wolfman and, you know, hell, the Abbott and Costello meet the Wolfman and all, you know, all those. You know, that was the original shared universe, at least as far as movies go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, you know, did we need to have a big introduction to a universe where all these monsters coexist? Not necessarily, because, you know, in the minds of movie fans going back to the 1930s and 40s, that already exists.
Well, and we did Van Helsing and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, both kind of failures, but they tried it there too. It seems like some things are just better left in the past.
Well, I just think that you can do that. You can assume that they all live in the same universe without having to set up a whole universe. Like, it shouldn't be surprising to people that you're making a Frankenstein movie and Dracula shows up somewhere.
I didn't even mention Monster Squad, which I think is probably the most successful version of that.
Well, you know why that's so successful.
Why?
Because Wolfman's got nards.
I thought you might say that.
It's the only line anybody remembers from that movie. Come on.
Yeah, it is.
It's, you know, it's fine. Like, I think that, like, in the minds of the world, and of course I've now completely diverted you from whatever your point was, so I apologize, because we're going to run out of time in this segment. We'll just come back with it in the next segment. We'll come back to whatever your point was, but you know, I think in the minds of the general pop consciousness that these monsters all live in the same world. I mean, you know, there's so many other things you can point to. Creature Commandos, you can point to the freaking Monster Mash, you know, the guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. You know, it's as far as we're concerned, these monsters all live in the same world. We're so used to seeing that going back to before all of us that are listening right now were born. I don't think there's I may be wrong. There may be one or two people listening that were alive when the original Frankenstein and Dracula came out in the 1930s, but it ain't a whole lot of people.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, I think that we already know they live in the same universe, and it wouldn't be surprising for them to show up in the same film. But I digress. We'll come back to whatever Jeremy's original point was when we come back from the break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
the lab late one night, when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise, he did the monster mash. It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abodes to get a jolt from my electrodes. They did the monster mash. It was a graveyard smash. It caught on in a flash. They did the monster mash.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line. And no, it is not Halloween. You did not fall through some kind of hole in time. But since we were talking about monsters, and I just totally told Jeremy's point before the break, I wanted to give him a chance to come back to what he was going to say about the whole dark universe thing. And, you know, there's no better song than that. That is, you know, again, if you're going to have a shared universe of monsters, it's already established. But please, Jeremy, go back to your initial point.
We have some more pressing stuff to get to, so we'll make a couple additional notes, and then we'll put a stake in the heart of this conversation.
Oh boy.
The Mummy opens this weekend, so we don't have box office yet.
Hold on there. Lee Cronin's The Mummy.
Excuse me.
You got to give it its proper title. Yeah, but you have a director, the prestige and stature of Lee Cronin.
It is interesting, right? So it's pretty split as far as critic reviews. As of right now, audience reviews are a little bit higher. I think the same could be said about The Wolfman. I mentioned Vanity Fair doing that image, and it actually was not a cover. It just was a photo shoot, as Julio, I think you kind of... However, I don't think that this was ever officially supposed to be building to any sort of shared universe. And as you mentioned, I didn't even know. This is a Warner Brothers movie. I wonder if there's even a place for these revisionist takes on these characters at this point, because I thought The Wolfman was pretty bad. What do you think? Do you think using these characters can work successfully in the context of titling them like these old Universal movies, or do you think we just need new Mummy movies and new Dracula movies that exist outside of that framing?
People are always going to take a stab at these. There's a reason that these characters are classic. You know, it's just like we're always going to do Shakespeare. We're mm-hmm. always going to come back to, at the very least, Frankenstein's monster, Dracula, and to probably a little bit lesser extent, the Wolfman. Unfortunately, to a much lesser extent, my favorite, the Gillman.
Gillman doesn't get a lot of shine, does he?
Creature from the Black Lagoon, whatever you want to call him. We're always going to come back to the Mummy. Probably always going to come back to some of the other Universal Monsters characters, the Invisible Man, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Phantom of the Opera, that sort of thing. I mean, even that song, you know, even the Monster Mash, there's a reason he was called Bobby Boris Pickett. It's because he was doing a Boris Karloff impression.
Yeah.
You know, yep. I mean, that whole thing, that whole, like, that very arch kind of diction that he does in that song, where he makes everything uh-huh. sound very ghastly. You know, that comes from Boris Karloff.
Yeah.
You know, it's all of that stuff. You know, everybody's Dracula comes from Bela Lugosi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does go back to, and I mean, both of those were novels first, but you know, the idea of those characters in your mind goes back to those original Universal films that have continued to stand the test of time. So,
and I mean, we had a successful Frankenstein movie by Del Toro. It just wasn't framed as part of this Universal monster pantheon. And there's been like 300 Dracula movies. So like, we know they can do it.
I mean, we technically had a Dracula movie last year in Nosferatu.
Yeah. I mean, and even what's the guy that did Fifth Element did a Dracula movie.
Yeah. I mean, if you Nosferatu, the original silent film Nosferatu, is an adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah. I'd say so.
Yeah, there's no bones about it. It's literally like it says in the titles. Like in the opening titles, it says based on Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
You know, it has over time Count Orloff has grown off to become his own thing, but it really isn't.
Yeah, there were like issues with Stoker's estate. Like his wife had a big issue with Nosferatu, and actually there was like litigation about it back in the day.
The film was supposed to have been destroyed because it was an unauthorized adaptation. And we only have copies of that film today. One of the greatest, greatest horror films ever made. One of the greatest silent films ever made. We only have copies of it now because some people hid copies of it.
Yeah.
You know, because it was ordered to be destroyed. Because of exactly that, because it was an unauthorized adaptation of Dracula, which was still under copyright at the time. I don't believe it is any longer.
I don't think so.
So in answer to your question, do we need a shared universe? No, you can always go out and do any one of these characters without it being tied to anything else. And there have been multiple adaptations and they continue to do them. I mean, we just had The Bride earlier this year.
Yeah.
You know, you can do any of these characters as a standalone without it being a universe. Do I think there's an appetite for a shared universe? I do. And I think that somebody eventually will get it right, whether it be Universal, which would be my preference, because I think they have created the most iconic versions of these characters as far as film goes. Or there are some of them, Dracula, Wolfman, Frankenstein, they are what they are. They come from different sources, but nobody else can go out and do a creature movie.
Right.
Creature from the Black Lagoon is an original film creation. You know, that is an iconography that exists based on the creature was the last of the classic Universal monsters to be created too. It came in the 50s. So the creature, no, you can't just stick him in anything. You can create an amphibious creature of some sort, but you can't make it look exactly like the Gill Man.
We get The Shape of Water, which is like shares DNA, but clearly not the Gill Man.
Yeah. I mean, it's different enough that, you can definitely see that it's it looks like to put it in terms of some other things that are currently around. If you look at Invincible, obviously a lot of the characters in Invincible are pastiches of other comic book characters.
Yes.
But it's different enough that, you can get away with it. You can make some commentary about superheroes in general, but you could take the characters off in their own direction. And while Omni-Man clearly starts off as Superman, he clearly becomes his own character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Shape of Water is a great example of that. So I'm not sure why you started off with this topic, but it's a great topic and we could probably do a whole show on it. But the answer is yes and no.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I thought it would be a good opening segment. Here we are. I know we got a lot of CinemaCon news to talk about as well, though. So we can jump into that when you're ready.
Yeah. And I think that CinemaCon is probably a good time to talk about that because we are talking about like basically all the movies that are going to come out for the next year. CinemaCon, if you don't know, is a big, it's not like a con like Pensacon is. Like you hear con in the title and you think, oh, it's a bunch of people are going to go and cosplay and there's going to be actors talking about their work and that sort of thing. CinemaCon is more of an industry convention. Like you think of like, you might be a business person in the industry that you work in has an annual convention somewhere and they go and they talk about the latest updates in that industry. You know, you're a pediatric dentist and you go to the pediatric dentist convention to learn about the latest techniques for, orthodonture and et cetera, et cetera. CinemaCon is that kind of gathering. It is a professional gathering for theater owners and theater management for, you know, exhibition is what they call it in the industry. That doesn't mean, no, you like to go out and open your trench coat. It means you are an exhibitor of films.
But if you do, we're not kink shaming.
Not kink shaming as long as you're not foisting something upon somebody else that they don't want to see.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. At any rate, so this is for exhibitors to bring them up to speed about all the movies that are coming out in the next year, to get them excited to book those movies into their theaters, to get them excited about talking to their customers about, hey, you really want to see this movie. I saw, I got to see it at CinemaCon, or I got to see a trailer of it at CinemaCon. I got to see the director talking about it at CinemaCon. So it's this presentation that all the major studios do, where they get up and talk about their slates for the next year, and they show previews. Sometimes they show complete screenings. Sometimes they just talk about, hey, this is coming up and here's where we are in this. They might show some photos, you name it. But it's more of a professional exhibition. It's why a lot of this stuff doesn't just immediately get on the internet.
Right.
So there are some things that came out this week at CinemaCon that have been out, where they've actually just gone ahead and released a trailer. There's other stuff where they've shown a trailer at CinemaCon, but they have not released it publicly. Big one that we'll talk about in a little while for sure. And then there's some stuff, some of it is stuff that's coming out in the next couple of weeks, so it's not a huge secret, but some of it's stuff that won't be out until, Christmas time or early next year, that sort of thing. It's a 12-month calendar here, basically. So there wasn't anything in particular about the Universal monsters, I don't think. Well, there was something about Robert Eggers' werewolf movie that he's doing. Not a whole lot of news about that, but that, Robert Eggers, who did Nosferatu last year, is doing another horror movie. So, maybe we'll get a Robert Eggers shared horror universe.
I don't think he could do much better.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that he wants to tackle Frankenstein so soon after Del Toro, but who knows, man? That guy's also making an Ebenezer Scrooge movie. So there's, there's no telling. He has a lot of projects out there in the works, but we're going to take a break and we'll get into the CinemaCon stuff when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Michael Rainey was ill the day the earth stood still, but he told us where we stand, and Flash Gordon was there in silver underwear. Claude Rains was the invisible man. Then something went wrong for Fay Wray and King Kong. They got caught in a celluloid jam. Then at a deadly pace, it came from outer space. And this is how the message ran.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Jeremy Branch is on the line with me, my co-host, and we are talking about news that came out of CinemaCon this week, which is the big presentation from all the studios to exhibitors for all the stuff that you're going to see on the big screen in the next 12 months or so thereabouts. A lot of news that came out of that, a lot of news that that we may mix in here. There's just news that came out this week in general as far as movies go. One of the things I thought was interesting, we'll just start here. This is more a little more business-oriented than some of the more, you know, ooh, I can't wait to see that movie kind of news. David Ellison, who is the head of Paramount Skydance and is attempting to be the head of all movies everywhere and all of all mankind, trying to buy everything within a 200-mile radius of Hollywood, basically. As you may know, Paramount/Skydance took over Paramount. Now Paramount Skydance is trying to take over Warner Brothers. He made a surprise appearance at CinemaCon, which is very interesting because he was invited to appear before a Senate hearing this week about the merger and was supposedly not able to because of a death in the family. But somehow he still made it to CinemaCon. At any rate, got up and spoke to the crowd and said something that was very welcome news to exhibitors, because when you're talking about exhibitors, you're talking about people that own theaters. They're trying to do everything they can to make people come see movies in theaters, to not just wait to see them at home. You know, there's been this tug of war between exhibitors and studios over the past few years about how quickly movies leave cinemas and go into availability at home, whether it be premium video on demand or on your favorite streaming service, or, you know, however you get them at home. Some people, I assume, still do DVDs or Blu-rays or 4Ks, you know, physical media, et cetera. David Ellison came out and told all of these exhibitors that he was going to commit to Paramount having a 45-day window. That means that when a film is in release in theaters, it will not be anywhere but theaters for 45 days before it starts going anywhere else. And I believe he also promised a minimum 90-day window before it goes to what they call SVOD, which is streaming video on demand, which is your Netflix, your Paramount Plus, your HBO Max, your Disney Plus, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So that 45 window in between would be where you still have to pay a premium to see it at home. You'd rent it from a premium video on demand streamer. So that's when you,
for $19.95.
Yeah, something. You pay Apple TV or you pay Prime or you pay YouTube or your local cable company, whatever, to rent it online. So then you could watch it for 24 hours and then it goes away. So, you know, obviously the, you know, he is trying to sway public opinion, and some of that public opinion, some is within the industry. You know, it matters what the general public thinks, but it maybe matters a little bit more whether people in the industry support this merger, because if they don't, they are more likely to put up barriers to it. So this is definitely a bone to exhibition to say, hey, look at us. See, we're great guys. We're going to make sure you're taken care of. And when we own Warner Brothers, we're going to make sure you're taken care of with all their movies too. And they're talking about 30 movies a year from these two studios total between them. They're ramping up to 15 a year from Paramount and 15 a year from Warner Brothers, which doesn't leave a whole lot of dates on the calendar. But, you know, they're trying to present themselves as the most exhibition-friendly company out there. Now, what do you think? What do you think, Jeremy? Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, absolutely. As a consumer is where my primary interest is, as somebody who loves the theatrical experience and somebody who tries to go, you know, about four times a month, I am a big fan of being able to go down there and do that. However, I am not sure that this benefits the consumer. And as a byproduct of that, I'm not sure that what we end up with on the other side is a model that is beneficial to the studios either, because let's just look at it like a family film, like Super Mario Brothers or something. If you're a family of four and you want to take your family out to see Super Mario Galaxy, or you may end up spending upwards of $100 after refreshments and tickets and all of that kind of stuff. So that's a very pricey excursion where you could rent the movie for $20 and end up, you know, having your whole family see it, sit down, get pizza, have a nice family time that way. And that way people are seeing the movies, which keeps them more engaged. So I guess I'm curious to see if this trying to cling to the theatrical going experience is actually positive for movie studios and properties in the long run.
Well, let me offer a counterpoint to your point. Mario's been out, what, 2 weeks?
Uh-huh.
It's crossed the $700 million mark worldwide.
Yeah.
Ticket expense is not keeping families away from this movie. Not remotely. Bad reviews aren't keeping people away from this movie.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's... and statistically, like, the movies that are doing the best long-term are the more family-friendly films. People want to be able to take their kids out somewhere and get them out of the house. So I get what you're saying, but I don't think it necessarily plays out in the demand from the public. I also have my doubts about how long they stick to this 45-day window. I think they're going to stick to it for as long as it makes sense. And the moment they think that there's more money in them going the other way, they're going to go the other way. It's not like he's committing to for eternity. There will be a 45-day window. And I would not be surprised after this merger goes through if they don't immediately start reevaluating that.
There are some movies that I miss just because there are so many that come out that I would hate to have to wait 90 days after a movie leaves the theaters to be able to see it. But I also do miss the days. You and I are from an era where, like, the waiting means that there was that much more of a payoff when you finally do get to see it. We're just such a, like, an instant gratification culture now.
Well, let's clarify a couple things there too. So 90 days is not 90 days from the film leaving theaters. It's 90 days from the initial release date.
Oh, so 45 days after.
45 days after the initial release date, it goes to premium video on demand. 90 days after, it goes to streaming video on demand. That's the minimum. The flip side of that is if something's doing really well in theaters and they don't want to send it to premium yet, they don't want to send it to streaming yet, then they don't.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's just that's the soonest it can go.
How do you feel about it? Like, what is your preference?
I think that there needs to be a window for theaters. I think that we do need to do something to make theatrical a priority. I think 45 days seems reasonable. It's not that long. It's a month and a half.
Yeah.
You know, used to be back in the day, there were movies that would play theaters for a year because there was that much demand for them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I don't have a problem with it. I also think that if a movie's doing really well in theaters, that the studios would be wise to wait. Like, if you've got a movie like, just pulling a rabbit out of a hat here, but let's say Mario, since that's the one that just came out, that's doing really well right now. And if that's still doing, you know, $10, $15, $20 million a week after 6 weeks, I think you push putting it out on video on demand.
So I know we could delve into a whole entire thing on this alone, but do they not have the choice now to do that?
Yeah, they do. They tend not to, though. They tend to just go ahead and throw it out.
And why would that be?
I would say premium video on demand has not really cut into theatrical. I think it's streaming video on demand that cuts into theatrical. So I think that doesn't hurt them. I think it's when it goes to streaming that it becomes, okay, I can just stay at home and watch this for free.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what makes the difference there. We've got to take a break. We're going to be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
sneak out this glass of bourbon and we'll go. We were once so close to heaven. Peter came out and gave us medals, declaring us the nicest of the damned. Time won't find the lost. It'll sweep up our skeleton bones. So take the wheel and I will take the pedal.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us, and we are talking about news that came out of CinemaCon. We burned a lot of time this week, so I don't know how much we're going to get through of some of the stuff that we wanted to talk about. So I'm going to try to maybe kind of hit some of the bigger stuff first, and we'll just see what we get through. I think the big thing is we have what feels like another attempt to manufacture a Barbenheimer with two big movies coming out the same day. I don't know that you can manufacture that. Like, I think Barbenheimer happened on its own.
Well, first of all, what are the two movies?
So we have Dune Part 3 and we have Avengers Doomsday that are both going to come out the same.
Barbenheimer, It was really important that they both were kind of counter-programming, right?
Right. Although there were a lot of people that wanted to see both and went to see both.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. What is the Venn diagram of Dune 3 and in-game viewers?
I figure it's about a 90% crossover.
So, yeah, there we go. There's the answer to the question. There's no shot that this creates the kind of synergy that Barbenheimer did.
Yeah, I agree. What it becomes interesting is which of them is going to, I think there is a, whose cuisine reigns supreme thing going on here, but I don't know which way it's going to go. And like, if you'd asked me a couple weeks ago, I'd be like, I think everybody wants to see Doomsday, but I think a lot of people really want to see Dune as well. A lot of people really like those movies. And the thing that would have leaned me towards Dune is that Dune has all of the IMAX screens locked up for that week. So that premium large format makes a big difference. IMAX in particular makes a big difference. That being said, IMAX is not the only premium large format screen.
Yeah, and aren't they whipping something up over a Marvel or Disney?
So, yeah. So we have, in addition to whatever else that I'm about to talk about, Dolby auditoriums are considered premium large format. Which we're getting a Dolby Auditorium here in Pensacola, which is exciting.
Awesome.
At AMC Bayou 15. Things like the 4DX auditoriums, those are considered premium large format. There's a few other premium large formats. And Disney is now creating its own. That's called Infinity Vision. This is one of the things they announced at CinemaCon. So Infinity Vision is a certification that they are going to give to certain premium large format screens where they have what they're calling the highest quality exhibition with laser projection and immersive sound, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it sounds to me like a Dolby would qualify as an Infinity Vision experience. But, I don't know if they're going to create auditoriums that are specifically Infinity Vision or if they're going to certify existing auditoriums as Infinity Vision quality. But that's what they're doing here. They're gonna debut this with a re-release of Avengers Endgame a couple of weeks before Doomsday comes out. And then Doomsday will be the first new release. Now, with this re-release of Endgame, they are saying that that release will include surprises. Surprises means additional scenes. May mean something else. I don't know what. But they have said that there will be some additional scenes. So we will get some. It will not be the version of Avengers Endgame that you've already seen. So are you excited about paying to see Avengers Endgame in a theater again?
For that, yes. For the Infinity Vision, no. The cynic in me believes that Infinity Vision doesn't exist and that it is just a brand and that it will practically change nothing other than now they can say that it can actually compete with Dune.
Well, here's my question. From a strictly Pensacola standpoint, will we have an auditorium here that qualifies for Infinity Vision?
It will change nothing for us,
I think. When none of our current auditoriums even have regular laser projection that a lot of theaters have.
Right.
Now, I don't know if with these upgrades that they're doing at AMC Bayou 15, whether we'll get that. I know we're getting a Dolby auditorium, so I'm assuming that one will have laser projection. I believe there's some upgrades to the IMAX auditorium, too, so I don't know if that includes projection. I hope it does. Beyond that, I don't know. By the time these movies come out, we're also going to be down 18 screens. Because by the time these movies come out in December, AMC on W Street, AMC Pensacola 18, will be closed. So I don't know how much it matters for Pensacola.
Do you want to see Infinity War or Endgame or whatever the new one's called, Doomsday, or do you want to see Dune? Because that's all we're going to have playing in our 15 theater multiplex.
Well, let me ask you this. Would it be worth it for you if there was no Infinity Vision certified auditorium in Pensacola, but there was one in, say, Destin or Mobile? Would it be worth it to you to drive to one of those cities to see Avengers Doomsday as intended in Infinity Vision?
Yes.
Okay.
It's about a 40-mile drive to Destin or the Wharf or whatever. So, it would take us an hour and a half commute to do it. For me, that's an easy choice. If I'm being honest, I feel like I have to be there opening day for Doomsday, where I also feel like I can watch Dune a day or two later and it not really negatively impact the film.
Honestly, that's how I feel about it too. Like, of the two, Doomsday is the one I'm more excited about. But I also do not love the Dune movies the way everybody else on the free planet seems to.
And I do, but I also love the Marvel fan experience. I feel like I'm of two minds of it. I think that Dune 3 will be the superior film and that Doomsday will be the Infinity theater going experience.
So if you had to go on your favorite, what do they call them? Projection market sites, these betting sites where you can bet on anything. If you had to go onto your favorite projection site and lay down a hundo on which one wins the box office that weekend, where are you laying it?
Doomsday wins the box office.
Okay. I mean, I think
what
so.
What do you think?
I think so too, but I think it's going to be a tougher battle than people think it is.
That would be, I'm interested to see it play out. I think it's terrible strategy on both of their parts, and it almost to me feels like Disney scrambling at the last minute to say, actually, we've got this thing that's going to make it better than it was going to be before.
You know who the only true winner is here?
Who's that?
Zendaya.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming she's going to be in both movies. There has been nothing said that she's definitively in Doomsday. I'm just assuming she's going to be.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
Marquee has plenty of room left, right?
It's already got half of Hollywood in it, so why not?
Yeah.
some other news that has come out in the last week or so. Wanted to mention the casting of Adria, I believe her last name is pronounced Arjona, it might be Arjona, but Adria Arjona for a role in Man of Tomorrow, which is the Superman sequel that's coming out in 2027. There's been some question marks about who she's been cast as. Publicly, DC has been saying that she's been cast as a character called Maxima, which if you are a comic nerd or maybe if you watch some of the animated series, you may know her. She's never been done on the big screen. She's been some of the live action TV series, but she's an alien queen who comes to Earth seeking Superman as her mate. Known for being a redhead. Adrian Arjona is not a redhead, just for the record. But many people are saying that that casting, which is what, you know, they solicited that they were casting for, is a smokescreen and that she's Wonder Woman.
What do you think?
They could go either way. I kind of would like it to not be as predictable as that. I kind of like the idea of it being Maxima.
That sounds very James Gunn story to me.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. It remains to be seen. What do you think about them announcing Top Gun 3?
I think that Top Gun Maverick is incredible, despite itself. I think with movies like Call of Duty and Top Gun 3 coming out right now at this current time in this current era, that I am less enthusiastic about it and don't think that we need a whole lot of propaganda being pumped through our veins at the theaters. But aside from that, I've enjoyed both other Top Gun movies. I'm sure it'll be enjoyable.
As long as it has America's Next Great Movie star Glenn Powell in it, it's going to be just fine.
That's right.
We're done for this week, guys. We will be back next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.